Hello, sports fans. Good evening and thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Sunny Young.
Stand up! Stand up! Stand up! Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro.
This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
Let's begin with football. Cameroon will meet Nigeria in Saturday's final of the African Women's Championship in Namibia after both teams won their semi-finals by a 2-1 scoreline. It also means the pair have qualified for next year's Women's World Cup in Canada. Nigeria overcame South Africa in Wednesday's earlier kickoff with a first-half brace from Asistat Ashoala, setting them on their way to victory. Jane Raffaello reduced the deficit for the South Africans, but the Super Falcons held on. In the other semi-final, Cameroon needed extra time to beat Ivory Coast and reach the final for the first time. Captain Christine Mani hit the winner in the 118th minute, heading in from a corner. With Africa having three places at the Senior Women's World Cup next year, South Africa and Ivory Coast are the beaten semi-finalists, still have a chance of making it with victory in the third-place match. Elsewhere, it was a good week for African footballers in the European leagues. To round up the scorers, let's now turn to our African football guru, David Legg, in Johannesburg, South Africa. David?
Yes, Douglas. You know, in the past some weeks, we've had the sort of almost embarrassing situation where we've had no African scorers in Europe. But this week, it's a very different story indeed. The Africans, I'm proud to say, have been banging in the goals. And one person I think we all are very proud of, and a high five from the Voice of America goes to Diafra Sakho. He's the Senegalese player featuring for West Ham United in the English Premier League. He's in amazing form. He has just scored his sixth goal in as many matches. So well done to Diafra. And his goal helped West Ham win 3-1 at Burnley. Wilfred Bonny, now there's a regular name when we talk of scorers. He is, of course, the Ivory Coast star. He plays for Swansea. He converted a penalty, but unfortunately Swansea went down 2-1 to Stoke City. Another Senegalese on target was Mohamed Diami of Hull City. He got an equalizer against Arsenal. Hull then went ahead, and in the end, Arsenal snatched a late 2-2 draw. Perhaps the most amazing result of the weekend was Southampton 8, Sunderland 0. Just short of the record. The record, for those who love those sort of statistics, Manchester United beating Ipswich Town by 9-0 way back when. And among those 8 goals, 2 Africans, Victor Wanyama from Kenya and Sadio Mane, another Senegalese player. So Senegalese, Douglas, really in top form in England at the moment. On to Spain and some more African goal scorers to report. Ikechukwu Uche, the Nigerian who plays for the Spanish La Liga side, Villarreal, he scored both goals in a 2-0 win over Almeria. And it's interesting that of late, Uche has not been finding his way into the Nigerian national team, doesn't get on particularly well with the now former coach, Stephen Keshi. Menucho, the giant Angolan, he scored for Rayo Vallecano, the only goal in a 1-0 victory at Granada, and completing a hat-trick of African scorers, Nordine Amrabat scored for Malaga. He's a Moroccan, and Malaga won 2-1 against Cordoba. On to Italy and Serie A, and Richmond Boyacchi, the Ghanaian, scored for Atalanta, and it proved to be a very precious goal, the only one of the game. Plenty of African goals in France as well. Nicolas Nkoulou of Marseille scored the first of 2 goals in a 2-0 win over Toulouse. Cheick Diaba, the prolific Mali striker, he scored for Bordeaux in a 1-1 draw against Cannes. And again, a third African scorer to report, Floyd Ayite, the Togolese player, he scored for Bastia in a 1-0 win over Nice. So well done to all those African goal scorers in Europe at the weekend. Douglas?
Yes, David, turning back now to the continent. 2015 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers, we know Algeria and Cape Verde have qualified. You look ahead to the last two rounds.
Well, that's right. If we look, we'll start with Group A, Douglas. And there, South Africa slipped up slightly in that they were held a draw at home by Congo-Brazzaville. But a win at home to Sudan in mid-November, that will see them qualify. And the really intriguing battle here is who's going to follow them. Will it be Congo-Brazzaville or will it be Nigeria? Well, they meet on November the 15th in Pointe Noire, and Nigeria really needing a victory there. Sudan mathematically can still qualify, but it's a real long shot as they've only got 3 points. On to Group B, and as you correctly said, Algeria are through. And although Mali were surprised home losers to Ethiopia, they look set to follow them at the expense of Ethiopia and Malawi. In Group C, it looks pretty clear-cut. Gabon in front with 8 points and Burkina Faso with 7, well ahead of Angola and Lesotho. And if Gabon and Burkina Faso win their remaining home fixture, they will qualify. But it's not so clear-cut in Group D. This is one of the toughest groups. Cameroon have 10 points, DR Congo 6, Ivory Coast only third in the group, also with 6 points, and Sierra Leone out of the running with 1. So all to play for in the final two rounds. I still believe Cameroon and Ivory Coast will make it, but watch out for DR Congo snatching that lone third-place spot. A reminder to all our listeners, top two in each group qualify automatically, and the best of the 7 third-place teams also make it, and that could well be DR Congo. Douglas, I know you hail from Uganda, and I'm afraid it's going to be a real battle for the Cranes to make it now. They lost home and away to Togo, and that really is something they could ill afford. Uganda, of course, a sad story in that the last time they qualified for the finals was way back in 1978 when they did exceptionally well. They reached the final against the host Ghana before losing 2-0. But the log as it stands has Ghana with 8 points and they look good for a place in the finals. Togo have got 6, Uganda and Guinea with 4 each. Uganda have got Ghana at home, and I suppose there will be confidence in Uganda because they did draw 1-1 away to the Black Stars. But the final match for the Cranes, the one that could be critical, is against Guinea, most likely in Morocco because of the Ebola crisis. In Group F, Cape Verde have qualified. And second place really is going to be a showdown between Zambia and Mozambique. They meet in Maputo in the penultimate round. And the winners of that game will qualify. If it should finish in a draw, the advantage would lie with the Zambians. And then Group G, the group of death. Egypt's 2 victories over Botswana have got them back into contention, but they only lie third at the moment. Tunisia on top with 10 points. Senegal have got 7, Egypt 6, and Botswana 0. Now, what's critical for the Pharaohs is they win their next match, which is at home to Senegal. That would give them a chance of a top two finish or possibly grabbing that third place. So, Douglas, all to play for. And a reminder that the final two rounds will be on November 14 and 15, and then the final games on November the 19th. We know that Morocco have qualified as hosts. We know that Algeria and Cape Verde have qualified. So there are still 13 places up for grabs.
Talking of Morocco qualifying as host, you know, there's a controversy over hosting the tournament because Morocco wants to postpone it because of the Ebola crisis. What do you make of this controversy?
Yeah, Douglas, it's understandable. For example, here in South Africa, I noticed a number of vox pops at the weekend getting the opinion of the public, and the vast majority of people, both male and female, said no, they don't want the CAN competition in South Africa. And that's been backed up just now by the Minister of Sports, Akile Imbalula, who says under no circumstances can South Africa afford to host another CAN competition. They did, of course, host it last year, taking over from strife-torn Libya. Yeah, to backtrack, Morocco, the original host, they said that they're happy to host the competition, but not on the original dates, which are January 17 to February the 8th. They fear, Douglas, that if hundreds of thousands of supporters come into Morocco, there is a grave danger that this Ebola epidemic, which has hit Guinea, Sierra Leone, particularly hard, could lead to a spread of disease. The crucial dates for all our VOA listeners are on the 2nd of November, the CAF Executive Committee will meet in Algeria to discuss the issue, although they have said that the tournament should go ahead on the original dates. And then on the 3rd of November, a CAF delegation led by the president, Issa Hayatou from Cameroon, will fly to Morocco for what are clearly make-or-break talks. Now, if they can convince the Moroccans to go ahead with the tournament, everything is fine. But if Morocco stick to their guns and say if they cannot host it in January and February, then CAF are going to call for volunteers, other countries who are prepared to step in at very short notice indeed. And what CAF have also said is if more than one country volunteers, they will have a draw to decide who becomes the new host of the 2015 Cup of Nations. Douglas?
In that case, David, what happens to Morocco? They miss the tournament?
Yeah, what I believe would happen then, Douglas, is that Morocco would be out of the competition. They didn't play any qualifiers because they're the host nation. And I suppose a simple solution, well, what would CAF would then have to do, of course, is give automatic qualification for the new host. And I thought all along it would be ironic if South Africa, who looked like qualifying for the first time since 2008, were to be given the right to host it. But the South African minister has said clearly that South Africa will not be the host nation. So let's just, for argument's sake, say Ghana get it, Douglas. They would replace Morocco, so to speak. And that's a very interesting situation because then the third-placed team in that group would qualify. That could be Uganda or Guinea.
Now, David, talk about the CAF Champions League final between DR Congo Club Vita and Satif of Algeria.
Well, that's right, Douglas. It all began way back in February. And, Douglas, if you had at that stage said to me the final is going to be between V Club and Satif, I would have said, Douglas, I respectfully disagree. We had the usual suspects when it came to believing who would win the competition. They were Al Ahly of Egypt, Esperance of Tunisia, and TP Mazembe of DR Congo. But they've all fallen by the wayside at different stages. Ahly didn't even reach the group stage. Esperance went out of the group stage, and Mazembe went out at the semifinals. And now we have two former winners. But I say former winners with capital F-O-R-M-E-R because V Club, you've got to go way back to 1973 for their lone success in the competition. That's 41 years ago. And Satif's only success came 26 years ago in 1988 when they won their titles. But they've got there on merit. V Club had a particularly difficult qualifying program. They had to beat Kano Pillars of Nigeria, Dynamos of Zimbabwe, and Kaiser Chiefs of South Africa. And then they've done very well in the group stage as well, only one defeat, and that was a narrow one away to Mazembe. Satif, same story in the qualifying. They overcame Cotton Spore of Cameroon, consistently one of the stronger teams in Africa. And then they upset Esperance and CS Sfaxien of Tunisia in the group stage. So they're both worthy finalists. Douglas, this one is hard to call. There's very little between these sides. But I must say I was very impressed with V Club in their semi-final against Sfaxien of Tunisia. They won 2-1 in Kinshasa. My belief was that was not going to be enough. They then went to Tunisia, fell behind early on, but had the resilience to come back and actually win 2-1 in Tunisia. And it's very rarely that you get an African club going to Tunisia and coming away with a victory. So perhaps they can be called slight favourites, but this one is really tight. And the key, of course, for Vita in the first leg at Kinshasa on Sunday is to score some goals, but not to concede any. This one is so tight, I could see it going to the away goal rule or even a penalty shootout. Douglas?
A good thing, David, Vita is from DRC, because DRC clubs have a good record.
Yes, Mazembe, of course, four times winners of the competition. They won in 67 and 68, and again, much more recently in 2009 and 2010. But it's funny how all the pundits, myself included, got the semifinals wrong. We were convinced we were going to get this dream final between Mazembe and CS Sfaxien. And there's an interesting comparison between the two Congolese clubs, Mazembe and Vita. Mazembe represents basically the whole of Africa. They've got Ghanaians, they've got Malians, they've got Tanzanians, they've got Zambians. And often their starting lineup only includes three Congolese players. So it's often been called the AU, the African Union of African Football. On the other hand, V Club very much rely on the Congolese. They've got a few imports as well. Notably, the Ugandan, Eunice Sentamu, who scored a winning goal away to Sfaxien. He's a name to watch out for. He's developing very quickly, is Eunice Sentamu. He featured well for Uganda at the 2014 African Nations Championship in South Africa. But yes, the Congolese, Douglas, they've got a strong league. You've got Mazembe and you've got Vita consistently doing pretty well in African football. And the Algerians, it's been some time now since they've actually won the title. But, of course, the North African teams are consistently strong. You've got the Egyptians, Tunisians, Algerians, and the Moroccans regularly featuring in the closing stages of the CAF Champions League. Douglas?
That's our classy African football guru, David Legg, speaking with us once again from Johannesburg, South Africa. And all is set for this Sunday's BMW Frankfurt Marathon, and the energetic Andy Edwards is there. He caught up with the defending champion Vincent Kipruto and Sharon Cherop, who won the Boston Marathon women in 2010. Here is Andy Edwards.
We're talking with Vincent Kipruto, who is going to be defending his title, the men's title at the BMW Frankfurt Marathon in 2014. That's coming up this Sunday. Vincent, you are a very fine winner last year in tough weather conditions. How confident do you feel of retaining that title?
I think that if the weather will be nice, I'll do good. I want to defend my title.
The weather in Frankfurt is something you really have to take into consideration, isn't it? Because it can be windy, it can be cold, can almost snow, but then some Sundays it can be hot. Do you prepare for kind of different weather conditions like that?
If the condition is good, which is favorable for running, I'll do it better.
Do you feel under pressure, or do you feel more confident, the fact that you won last year?
I'm confident, I don't have pressure.
Everyone knows how fast the Frankfurt course is. Wilson Kipsang ran close to the world record, what was then the world record, 3 years ago. Do you think you can beat your personal best this year and run even faster?
Yes, my aim is I want to run my personal best this year.
When you're preparing for a marathon, does your training change much? Do you look at what you do and say, well, we can improve this or that, talking about it with your coach?
I think the same training I used last year is the same I used this year, so I don't think I changed it much.
Yeah. And Frankfurt is a flat course. It's known as a fast course. Does that dictate how you might train? The nature of your training?
You know, when you're going to run in a flat course, you have to run in, you find a suitable place to train, which is about the same as the course which you are going to run.
And do you do then long runs at that kind of marathon, almost race pace, as part of that preparation?
No, you don't use the marathon pace in training. No. If you use the marathon pace in training, you'll get exhausted and you'll not come and run anything.
Well, we look forward to seeing how you do with that defence of the BMW Frankfurt Marathon title on Sunday. Vincent Kipruto, last year's men's winner, all the best for the race. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We're having a chat with Sharon Cherop, who's well known on the marathon scene, had fine performances in places like Boston, and now she's running in Frankfurt, the BMW Frankfurt Marathon, for the first time this Sunday. Sharon, I mentioned Boston, and that's a very different course, hilly, famous for its hills, compared to Frankfurt, which is famous for being flat and indeed a very fast course. Do you adapt your training, your approach, for a different course like Frankfurt?
So I told you that this time round, I changed my program completely since I came from Boston, because I see every year I've been running 2:22 since 2010, and I say this is my time, this is the high chance for me to change my training to see if I can improve to come from 2:22. But I believe and trust that I will have my personal best after changing my program.
And just what have you changed in your program to in this hope, ambition to break 2:22?
I do a lot of speed work because I see that seems I have a good endurance, but not much speed.
Is it also a kind of psychological, sort of click or little problem that you feel you're stuck in a groove, always 2:22? Do you feel you need to make a mental breakthrough as well?
Yes, I believe that I will come out of that 2:22.
So do you think Frankfurt is the right place to really break that barrier?
Yes, the right place, the flat course, and even Wilson Kipsang, when he was trying to run world record, he just missed the world record by 4 seconds. And I believe that this is the right course for me to improve my personal best.
Yeah, of course, you mentioned that achievement by Wilson Kipsang 3 years ago, going so close to what was then the world record. I know just before we sat down to talk, you were in a group and people were talking about motivation for runners, and we were saying about, well, ordinary runners, mass runners, sometimes don't feel like running. They feel tired or lazy, or they've just been to a party the night before. And you said some very interesting things. I mean, you as an elite runner, do you ever have those feelings of you wake up and you think, I don't want to train today? What do you do to convince yourself to get out of bed and train?
Sometimes you can feel you are tired because of the training you have done. And you can change your training, not imagining that you can stay without training because you are a professional runner and you have a focus of a race ahead of you. So you have to adjust it and go for your training. Sometimes it can rain in Kenya, but we have to adjust in our program.
And do you feel lazy? You're such a good runner, you and so many other East African runners. But do you ever feel lazy and just feel like lying around all day and doing nothing?
You feel less when you have done a lot of work, maybe every training, but you can change to go for each run according to the program.
Do you think that's also part of the reason for Kenyan success, is that you seem to know how to relax? When you do relax, you really do relax, whereas some runners who are not from, shall we say, East Africa, they find other things to do and maybe they tire themselves out.
You know, when you are a professional athlete, you have to get target. You have to get that focus because you have the target to make it.
Well, Sharon Cherop, wish you all the best for the first time of you experiencing the BMW Frankfurt Marathon. Hope you crack that 2:22 barrier and you enjoy your debut in Frankfurt. Thanks very much, Sharon.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andy. The energetic Andy Edwards in Frankfurt.
Right now, you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports with Sonny Young. So check it out.
Now let's join Daybreak Africa's sportsman Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
We begin with cricket. Uganda beat defending champions Nepal by 20 runs at the start of their campaign at the Pepsi ICC World Cricket League Division 3 in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia on Thursday. Today, Friday, Uganda plays Singapore before the United States of America on Sunday. Turning to football, Togo is the world's most improved national men's team, while Burkina Faso and Armenia have each slipped by the widest margin in the world, according to the FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Algeria has climbed to 15th place in the world ranking, their highest ever in their football history. They top the African chart. Ivory Coast are 23rd, Tunisia 31st, Cape Verde Islands 33rd, Ghana 35th, Egypt 38th, Cameroon 40th, Senegal 41st, Nigeria 42nd, and Togo 52nd. Elsewhere, the Democratic Republic of Congo's AS RS Vita host Algeria's Entente Setif in the opening leg of the Orange African Champions League final in Kinshasa on Sunday. Meanwhile, hosts Zambia play Ivory Coast in a men's friendly international in Lusaka tomorrow Saturday. Staying in Lusaka, Zambian head of state President Michael Sata is set to honor the Zambian team that won the 2012 Orange Africa Cup of Nations on the occasion of Zambia's 50th independence anniversary on Sunday. Finally, over 3,000 athletes line up for the Standard Chartered Nairobi Marathon in the Kenyan capital on Sunday.
Daybreak Africa sportsman Mark Omar reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Thanks, Mark. And now to VOA's Downtown Brown with our English Premier League question of the week.
Hey, this is VOA's Downtown Brown, and I'm back again with Question of the Week. The question was, who is your favorite English Premier soccer player? For everyone that left a comment to the Question of the Week on Facebook, I'm giving you a Sunnyside of Sports salute. We had over 25 people who left me comments, and 7 people said their favorite player is Angel Di Maria from Manchester United. There was a tie for Diego Costa and Eden Hazard from Chelsea with 4 votes. 3 people said Alex Sanchez from Arsenal. 2 people said Cesar Fabregas from Chelsea. And we had a 5-way tie with 1 vote of Oscar from Chelsea, Wayne Rooney from Manchester United, Sergio Aguero from Manchester City, Daley Blind from Manchester United, and the famous Roger Miller from Cameroon, and Pili, Southampton. Injury news, Diego Costa has a hamstring injury and is out for the next match. Angel Di Maria from Manchester United with a groin injury is a possible chance to come back for next match. Antonio Valencia from Manchester United with a hamstring injury. Frank Lampard with a muscle injury. And we'll try to keep you up to date with recent soccer injuries and soccer stories. And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/VOASunny. Games to watch over the weekend. We have great classic matches this week. Real Madrid versus Barcelona. Lionel Messi versus Cristiano Ronaldo. Manchester United versus Chelsea. Di Maria versus Eden Hazard. Take your pick and check your local listings for the time. In the studio, we have Tef Tef, who's going to give us some of his insights on the weekend matches. What match do you think will be more exciting to watch? Real Madrid or Man U versus Chelsea?
Any other day, I would have gone with Chelsea, Manchester United, especially if it was 2 years ago when both of them were powerhouses in England. Right now, we all know that Manchester United is a little less than who they were. So I think at this point, with Real Madrid being one of the best scoring teams in Europe, and then Barcelona not having conceded a goal in the La Liga, if I'm right, it's going to be an incredible game. Cristiano scored 15 goals already. Barcelona has not conceded a single goal in La Liga. So I want to see how that turns out in one game.
So what player do you think is going to stand out in both of these matches?
One player from each match?
Yeah.
As much as I want to say Messi, because he's always, you know, he's always there, I think Cristiano is going to be the one who's going to have to show up this time. As far as England goes, I want to see Di Maria do his magic. Only because, again, if Costa was there, I would have called on Costa to be the main player. And again, who knows if Mourinho is going to play him or not. But right now, I think Di Maria, if he comes back from injury, as he should, is going to be the more exciting player to watch.
So having Wayne Rooney out for next game against Chelsea, do you think that's going to be a big deal?
Manchester United missed him against West Brom on Monday. He could have been that player who brings change, but especially in a game such as this one, you know, he's always scored in the big games. It would have been a big addition to Manchester United.
Make your predictions on both matches. Who do you think is going to win? Give me some scores.
I've already told people that I see Real Madrid winning this one. I think Real Madrid can score one goal. It's going to put doubt in the, you know, Barcelona's defense. And not having conceded a single goal, it might open the floodgates. So I want to say 3-2 for Real Madrid in that game. And I'll have the same score line. I'll go with 2-1 for Manchester United. I know it's not a popular pick, but I expect Chelsea to kind of be, you know, too comfortable with their midweek win. They ended up beating a team called Maribor for, I don't know, 6-0 or something. And so I think they're going to be too overly confident coming out of that game. And they're also missing, at least at this point, 3 of their best strikers. So I think Manchester United might take that game.
Hey, Tef, thanks for your time. Great having you, man.
Sure. Thank you.
On VOA's Downtown Brown. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.
Thanks, Downtown Brown. See you again next week. And that wraps up another expanded edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impuga. Sunny Young will be back next week. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Have a great weekend, fans.